following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
That's why I'm so late. I went to the drugstore, I peed on the strip. I waited 10 minutes, yeah, that's what I did. 10 minutes later, I got a plus sign, you know what that means. Jesus Christ, I'm just 17. There's no plan A, there's no plan B. Unless you know you got the do-re-mi. You better not fuck in Texas. Whatever you do, you better not fuck in the Lone Star State. They just love to fuck you.
Substitute Arizona for Texas now.
So I went to the clinic and I thought they would help. They just gave me a Bible instead. A real doctor or nurse, nowhere to be seen. Get me the hell out of Abilene. 500 miles across the state line. Who can I trust to give me a ride? Yeah, who can you trust? Won't be a snitch. $10,000, I'd even turn myself in.
That is the brilliance. That is Jill Sobule. Yeah, she recorded that a few years ago. Let me see. It was in October of 2021. And the reason she recorded that song and released it is because Texas had just enacted the Texas Heartbeat Act. It was Senate Bill 8. It banned abortion. And I'm reading from Wikipedia now because, you know, after the detection of embryonic or cardiac activity, which normally occurs after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. Actually, cardiac activity does not occur at 6 weeks. There's an electrical beat. It's not a heartbeat. The heart is not formed at 6 weeks. At 6 weeks, a fetus is still kind of a cell, like a zygote. Anyway, this goes on. The law took effect on September 1st, 2021, after the U.S. Supreme Court denied a request for emergency relief from Texas abortion providers. It was the first time a state has successfully imposed a six-week abortion ban since Roe v. Wade, and the first abortion restriction to rely solely on enforcement by private individuals through civil lawsuits rather than having state officials enforce the law with criminal or civil penalties. Do you remember this? The way they wrote it, which had to have been unconstitutional, was that anybody could report anybody else for aiding and abetting somebody to get an abortion. It was insane. That is what spurred that song from Jill Sobule. who, by the way, is just a brilliant recording artist. And if you're not familiar with her music, you should check her out. She's been on this show many times because I've known Jill for many years. She's the one who did, you know, when they say they want their America back, what the fuck does it mean? That's Jill Sobule, but she's more than that. Anyway, I found that looking for an appropriate song to play for today. Now, here's my other dilemma. As you may know, I'm new to Arizona, and I'm kind of disgusted with my adoptive new state today. Just about as disgusted as I was with Florida, but I can't afford to move to California. So I'm here in Arizona, and so what I'm going to do is fight like hell to continue Arizona's move into the blue category. You may recall back in Florida, before I realized that the then Florida Democratic Party leadership wanted nothing to do with any progressives, I signed on to be a precinct committee person. The experience was horrible, as you know, people who've been with me for a while remember. But I'm doing it here. I was asked by a friend, and I thought, you know, it's all or nothing at this point. So we all have to get skin in the game. And no, I don't like, you know, playing political theater, but there's nothing more important right now. So in case you were sleeping and didn't hear the news yesterday, the Arizona Supreme Court yesterday ruled that since Roe v. Wade was overturned, we'll get there in a moment, there was a law in effect in Arizona put on the books in 1864, before Arizona was even a state, before women had the vote. I mean, we're talking 1864, people. Come on, 1964, I was 4 years old. We're talking 1864. This is madness. And I didn't read the whole opinion. Frankly, it just sickens me. However, here's the part of the law. A person who provides, supplies, or administers to a pregnant woman or procures such woman to take any medication, drugs, or substance, or uses or employs any instrument or other means whatever with intent thereby to procure the miscarriage of such woman, unless it is necessary to save her life, shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for no less than 2 years, nor more than 5 years. And what happened was, when Roe was decided by the Supreme Court and women's right to bodily autonomy was enshrined in the law, this 1864 Arizona law just became moot. It didn't apply anymore, but it was never removed from the books. So whoever brought this case to the Arizona Supreme Court said, well, if Roe is not in effect anymore, then it should revert to the law that was in effect before Roe took over. And I guess, I'm sure there is a way they could have said, no, this is bullshit, but they didn't, because they're all Republican appointees. And so now, as of yesterday, this 1864 law, the clock is ticking. It will, unless something else happens, go into effect in 14 days. I guess that's 13 days now, because that was yesterday. So I'm still new here in Arizona. I'm starting to meet the people involved. And I have met on a couple of occasions the Arizona State Senate Minority Leader. I reached out to her this morning to see if she would talk to us for a few minutes, but I got no reply. I've reached out to a few people. I don't have the juice here. I was going to say yet, but who knows if I ever will. But anyway, my efforts to get somebody, now I know it's all hands on deck time, so I'm not faulting anyone for not getting back to me. They have more important things than my little, piddly show. But I couldn't just move on to a different topic because this is too important. So I started thinking, what did I do on this program, the show after the Dobbs decision came down from the Supreme Court, the first show back after this extreme court overturned Roe v. Wade? And so I went back through my archives. And by the way, you can do this too. If you go to NicoleSandler.com, you can search anything. You can search abortion, and it'll bring up every show on which I've talked abortion. And it brought up, I did that. That's what I did. And it brought up a show from, oh, damn. The date was June 27th of 2022. Well, it turns out that that was a Monday. On Friday, Friday was June 24th, 5th, 6th, yeah, June 24th, 2022. That was the day the court overturned Roe v. Wade. Well, if you've listened to my show and other progressive radio over the years, if you were an Air America listener, you probably know who Reverend Barry Lynn is. He used to be the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Great guy. Really good guy, and he's been a regular guest on and off over the years. And he had suggested that I speak to a gentleman named Bill Baird. And I was embarrassed to admit, once I did a little research, that I had never heard of Bill Baird before. But I reached out to him, and he blew my mind. And everybody should know Bill Baird's name, especially as we're fighting the same battles that we fought or our parents fought, or in some cases, our grandparents fought 50, 60, 70 years ago. Now, when I spoke to Bill Baird in June of 2022, he had just celebrated his 90th birthday. I have to warn you, it's not an unusual thing around here in that, you know, we had some technical problems that day, go figure. But I implore you to stick through it. Because it gets better. You will be able to hear him. You'll see, we have a lousy internet connection. I don't know if it was on my end or on his. I'll take the blame because, you know, gremlins. I was still in Florida, so you'll notice a different studio. I want you to hear our conversation because it was so important. It still is. So I take you back to the first show, post Roe v. Wade, post the end of Roe v. Wade, I should say. All right, let's go to the videotape.
We've got an amazing guest coming up for you in a moment because we're going to talk about how the quest for reproductive rights in this nation really began, with whom they began. Our guest is known and widely regarded as a reproductive rights pioneer. Some call him the father of birth control and abortion rights movement. Bill Baird will join us in just a moment. But before we bring him on, I want to share with you what this is about. I've been, you know, I'm active on Twitter, and I tend to speak and tweet before I think sometimes. And I say what I feel. You know, that's the other thing. I don't mince words. And I'm honest, sometimes brutally so. So I've been attacked by people who tell me that I want to kill babies, that we believe in partial birth abortion. Let me tell you something, there is no such thing. Nobody wants partial birth abortion. The lies being told by the right are shameful, except they know no shame. So, but let me just share with you a Twitter thread from a woman named Suzanne. Actually, her Twitter handle, so you can follow her, is sjohns.tire. I'll post a link to it on the blog where I post today's show, so you can read it if you want. But let me just share with you what she wrote after this ruling came down. She said, "Pro-lifers don't like complexity. At 17 weeks, my placenta detached, and he was much too small. I thought I felt my baby's frantic attempts to breathe. My OBGYN advised me to terminate the pregnancy. There wasn't much time, but I couldn't. Every doctor told me it would only get worse, and it did. but I already loved him. I'd waited 8 years for him. They saw on the ultrasound that his umbilical cord was yards long. An umbilical cord spinning out a lifeline helplessly. He'd stopped growing, but his heart continued to beat, even as his movements, frantic at first when the oxygen cut off, slowed, and he became horribly still. I hated the doctors who couldn't save him. An infection spread from the placenta to him. I began to understand, to believe them, that I would die too. I felt that we were dying. But selfishly, I waited for more tests and more tests, dozens of them. In a natural world without medical science, fluid tests, ultrasounds, in a world like the one God may have intended, we would have died without the nightmare of knowing beforehand. But we are in this world. When my fever rose, my family insisted. I was a mother already. In a world like the one God may have intended, we would have died without the nightmare of knowing beforehand, but we are in this world. When my fever rose, my family insisted. I was a mother already. My child needed me. My family arranged with New York Presbyterian Hospital for us to fly to Kansas because I was now in my 24th week, and he would not have filled my palm. I dreamt of being filled with ice and death. His organs were shutting down, so there was no amniotic fluid. He was in a dry and poisoned uterus suffering. I was panicked by the thought of his suffering. We arrived in Kansas, an arid place I had only imagined through the Wizard of Oz. I was delirious. Things were getting worse. The doctor in Kansas was kind, but sad. He carried a shotgun because he'd once been shot in both arms. Our taxi driver slowed to a crawl and rolled all the windows down as we arrived at the clinic. I didn't know why. My son was in the car with us. I hadn't realized we were coming to one of those places from TV with angry people outside. They brandished signs, cruelly displaying the bodies of tiny fetuses, pumping the signs up and down and shouting. They saw my son in the car and began shouting at him, "Your mother is killing her baby." A nurse rushed through to shield us and guide us into the clinic. A psychologist spoke to my son. The process took a week. There is no such thing as partial birth. I held his tiny body. We had a private service with a minister. He was like a bird in my hands. My son, I had never felt so empty. A trickle of blood ran out of his nose and I wiped it. Back in New York City, some two observant people in my building knew. My milk had come in. The mail carrier who delivered his ashes to me knew, and I could see she wanted me to know that she disapproved. I saw she also felt sorry, but like she was supposed to despise me. We'd always gotten along. I closed the door and held the box under my robe and sobbed on the floor. "Don't worry. He just forgot something. He has to go back to get it, then he'll come back." My son was wise. I felt so much sadness. 15 months later, I had another baby. I was nursing him in the glider, and the song Frankie and Johnny was playing. I picked up the New York Times. On the front page, I saw that the doctor from Kansas had been killed while ushering in church. Murdered by a man who traveled miles to kill the baby killer, hunting him down on a Sunday morning. People think of abortion as ending life. But it saves women's lives, mothers' lives. There is life today because of Dr. Tiller, where there would have been only emptiness and death. This is one of many such stories I've read over the past few days since the Supreme Court set women's rights, human rights, back half a century. So it's with that in mind that I'm honored to bring on our guest today. His name is Bill Baird. Again, you may not even know his name, although you should. We all should. And I don't know why, honestly, I don't know why I'd not heard of him before. My friend, Barry W. Lynn, said, "You really should interview Bill Baird." So I'm honored and I'm grateful that Bill Baird joins us today. Bill, thank you so much for being here.
I'm very thrilled to be with you.
So you are called by some in the media and other places the father of birth control and abortion, the abortion rights movement. You were jailed 8 times in 5 states in the 60s for lecturing on abortion and birth control. You're also believed to be the first and only non-lawyer in American history with 3 Supreme Court victories. We owe you a lot of thanks. So let's start off with that.
Actually, there were 6 Supreme Court cases I had, but what it really was I was 1963 when I began as clinical director for a drug company, and I was at a very famous hospital, you may have heard of, called Harlem Hospital, and it was really a hospital for poor people. And when I was there coordinating research, I heard a scream. And you know, when you hear a scream like that, there was somebody who was in very bad condition. So I raced into the hallway, and I saw this young mother stagger in, covered with blood, as if somebody threw a can of red paint on her. And I caught her. And as I caught her, she sagged to the floor. I noted she had a piece of coat hanger sticking out of her.
Oh, my God.
And this poor woman tried to abort herself. And I was so outraged that she could not, under New York law at that time, get an abortion, but she could not get birth control. And I was so outraged that nobody seemed to care about the laws. So I went to Planned Parenthood. And since you're as brave as I believe I've been told you are, this may shock you. I went to Planned Parenthood. I said, Baird, don't you know? Our position is we don't support abortion. I have in writing their literature in the 60s, abortion took the law.
Uh-oh, we froze. Hopefully we'll unfreeze in a second.
Of a child. They were opposed to literature on this desk. The literature said, okay.
Okay, you're back. Sorry, you froze for a second. So the literature said that Planned Parenthood is opposed to abortion.
She's talking, but we're not here.
You're not hearing me?
I can't hear you.
I need to sit up.
Oh, no. Okay, you're not hearing me at all, huh? I'll tell you what. I am going to put... You're not hearing me at all? I don't know what's going on. I'll tell you what. If I put hearing me? Okay, good. Sorry, we had an electronic glitch. All right, so the last thing we heard from you, you said the Planned Parenthood literature said that they do not support abortion. I seem to have lost you again.
I support abortion.
Okay.
And also, did you lose me again?
Okay, no, you're back now. We're shaking, okay. But you're back.
They would not give birth control to unmarried people. So I had challenged a lawyer in New York in 1965, was arrested, put in jail. The crime was indecent exposure of obscene objects. I won in that case. Then Freehold, New Jersey, decided to jail unwed mothers in 1966. I said, that was stupid. Why would you jail them? They said, because it would lower the welfare cost because they won't have a chance of getting pregnant. And if they don't get pregnant, they won't have babies that we have to support. So I said, that's nuts. Why don't you let me teach them birth control? It's against the law of New Jersey. I said, well, I'm coming there. And I had a mobile clinic, 25-foot.
Oh, we froze again. You know, the internet is a great thing, except when it doesn't work and you're in the middle of an interview. Okay.
And I drove it to New Jersey, Freehold. And when I got there, you won't believe it, there were at least 50 policemen. Oh,
boy.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. You're back. You know what?
Can you want to tape it?
Well, we're live on the air right now, but I'll tell you what. Okay. So what I did was, hold on 1 second. So I gave him the phone number. I'm coming back in. I edited the tape here because I know that was brutal. I gave him the phone number. We kept the camera on. And you'll hear when we pick back up, you'll hear double audio for a couple of minutes, but it gets better, I promise. I'm sorry. Look, the show was too important not to be able to replay for you. So we'll pick it back up. And if you can bear with it for just a couple of minutes, it gets better. I know they say that about a lot of things, right? All right, back to the videotape. Okay, it's not ringing yet. Oh, no. Oh, there we go. Okay, there we go. Okay.
Okay.
There you are.
Hi.
Okay.
Okay.
So I can hear you now. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you. Clear and clear.
Okay, so you were telling us in the 60s about you decided you saw a woman come into a hospital bleeding because there was a hanger. out of her. So you told people you can teach about birth control, but birth control for unmarried people was illegal then, yes?
Yeah, it was illegal at that time. So I went to the largest group, Planned Parenthood. I said, hey, look, a woman died. I need your help. Can you help me fight law 1142 in New York State that denied birth control information to unmarried people? And they said, no, don't you know? Here's our literature. And they gave me their literature, which I kept all these years, that said they would not give out birth control unless you were married or unless you could prove you were engaged about to get married. And then they gave me their literature on abortion. And their literature on abortion said abortion takes the life of a child. They were opposed to it. And you mentioned in the intro that you don't hear very much about me, and that's one of the reasons why. Planned Parenthood, and you've seen this yourself, I bet you in my life, on television almost every day, saying how Griswold versus Connecticut legalized birth control. An absolute lie. Repeat. How do I know that? Griswold, if you read it, only legalized birth control for married people. They totally neglected and betrayed unmarried people. And I said, why won't you fight for unmarried people? Because we don't give out help to unmarried people. And I said, that's wrong. So I decided I would fight the law. I got a call from Ray Mongold, you may have heard of, was a writer. He wrote for the Boston University, where he was a student and editor of the newspaper. And he said, Bill, would you please come? I've got 800 signatures of people wanting you to fight our law, which carries, listen to this carefully, a 10-year jail term. It's called Crimes Against Chastity, Morality, Decency, and Good Order. And it was a crime to give out any information on birth control or abortion. At first I said no. So why no? I got four little kids at home. How am I going to support them? I don't have money for a lawyer. He said, well, we're going to give you a lawyer. The ACLU already said that they will defend you if you get arrested. So on April the 6th, 1967, I brought this to show you. This is Time Magazine. April the 6th, the day of my arrest, it was a picture of the birth control pill, which you could not show. On the bottom of the picture, if you notice, there's a little pill called St. Joseph's Baby Aspirin.
Yes.
That looked like the pill, and then on top was the real pill. So I said, would you jail me for showing the real pill, a picture of the pill, or something that looks like the pill? Police wouldn't move. How in the world not to be heard by the Supreme Court, as you know, there's a 98% chance you're not going to be heard. And I was determined, if I could get heard, maybe I could wipe out the law on birth control, on abortion, and for gay rights. So I decided to try even harder. So I picked up the Bible, because I know in Catholic Boston, that would get their tail going. So I picked up the Bible, Genesis 38. 9 through 11, God told Onan to have intercourse with his dead brother's wife, which he did. But in the Bible, the chapter I gave you, says he spilled his seed on the ground. Now, spilling your seed, sperm, on the ground is called coitus interruptus or withdrawal. That's against the law. So I said, if you're going to arrest me, there were a dozen cops. I said, if you're going to arrest me, and 2,000 students, by the way, I said, if you're going to arrest me, you must arrest your attorney general and all the churches for allowing this illegal matter to go on. They wouldn't move. So I said, boy, if I don't get arrested, I don't have standing to challenge the law because I'm married. So I said, how do I get this heard? And so I reached into my pocket, and I had a sales receipt for a little can of Emco foam, contraceptive foam, which I'm clinical director, national clinical director. Anyone knows the product, it's me, I'm clinical director. So I gave it to a 19-year-old student, and it's important you listen to that, 19-year-old. Mm-hmm. In those days, if you're under 21, you were a minor. Huh? So I was challenged in the law for females who were minors as well. I gave it to this 19-year-old. The moment I gave it to her, the police came up on the stage, you're under arrest, violating the law, so forth and so on. And I said, holy smokes, this sounds great. But I said, wait a second, where is my legal help? I said, wait a minute. I said, I was told the ACLU is here. Will you please stand up and defend me as we go into court? Not a sound. I repeated it a second time. I said, hold it. I come from New York. It's a 10-year prison term to challenge this law. I'm laying a lot on the line to help you and help women. Help me. Not a sound. The third time, I said, this is an outrage. And he jumped up. He said, I'm with the ACLU. We will defend you. 3 weeks later, and this is history, and why you find the opposition to me from so-called allies. ACLU, I'm on their board of directors. They say to me, Bill Baird, we cannot take your case. Why? because we talked with Planned Parenthood. They said there's nothing to be gained by your case, and there's no constitutional merit, and we agree with them. And they walked away. And here I am, facing 10 years in prison as a convicted, as a possible convicted felon. So I was really very outraged because I was betrayed. I put my freedom on the line. I had four little kids at home. How am I going to support them? What am I going to do? But finally, Joe Bolero, a very famous criminal attorney in Boston, says, Bill, I don't agree with you. I'm Catholic, but I like a guy with big testicles. He says, I will fight for you. And he says, okay, man. And he took me on. We went to the lower court, and what I'm going to tell you is the absolute truth. Brilliant lawyer. What a great defense he was putting up. I said, hold it, Joe, stop, stop. He said, what do you mean stop? He said, up in the courtroom in front of the judge, very quietly. I said, don't you understand? I got to lose. I don't want you to win. I want to take a dive. So he did, and of course I lost the case. I was convicted as a felon, and I was sentenced to prison at the Charles Street Jail, where I had to deal with beatings, rats in my cell, and we're heading now all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. But in the meantime, I have on the desk right in front of me Planned Parenthood News, spring 1967. Okay, I'm holding it up, and it says here, there is nothing to be gained by the Bill Baird. Bill Baird's case, he is an embarrassment to us. They double-cross any effort and double-cross the rights of women to be heard by the Supreme Court. So, finally, we're heading in. This is, I'm telling you, because I want it to be known for history. Of all the pains that I've had, this is one of the most painful things I'm about to tell you. I'm headed to the U.S. Supreme Court, thanks to Joe Bolero. I get a call from U.S. Senator Joseph Tiding from Alaska. He's the governor of Alaska at that time also. He says to me, Baird, he said, I want you to fire Joe Bolero. I said, wait a minute, how can I fire him? He's bringing me up to the Supreme Court. He says, I have a guy you may have heard of, U.S. Senator Joseph Tiding from Maryland. He is friends with many of these judges on the Supreme Court. He plays golf with them. He has lunch with them. They know who he is and they respect him. If he argues your case, you have a better chance of winning. But I said, I can't betray my friend. I said, he says to me, are you going to betray your friend or betray the woman who you worried about who died with coat hangers? And I said, man, there's no choice there. So I fired Joe, and as you can guess, he sued me.
Oh.
He lost as I knew he would. And Joe Tidings took the case. And on March 22nd, 50 years ago, you did not hear a single ally, Planned Parenthood, now, any of them, can't stand up and say, this is the 50th anniversary of the history of unmarried women to have the freedom to use birth control. I had won my case on March 22nd, 1972, when the U.S. court said, if the right of privacy means anything, the right of the individual to be free, to decide what to bear or beget a child.
Wow.
And that's how the history of that, and that's why my so-called allies will not let you, the public, know, including the media, don't have the freaking guts to put somebody on like me, and a few other people like the man who referred you to me, saying the truth has to be told.
Without a doubt. This was the case, Eisenstadt versus Baird. This is the case that legalized contraception
for unmarried people.
Unmarried people. And now Clarence Thomas is saying that he's coming after contraception next.
Why didn't he come after the fact that as a black man, he could marry a white woman? That was a love case. He wasn't allowed to do
Loving
that.
Versus only, Virginia. That's the only one in that group that he didn't mention.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder why that, right?
So that's surprising. So anyway, then here's something else you don't know. I bet you don't know. You don't hear a single word. That you know there's a very important U.S. Supreme Court case I had called Baird versus Bilotti.
Okay.
The right of teenagers to get an abortion without parental consent. That's my case. I'm taking this case now, headed up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Roy Lucas, one of the top attorneys in the United States, is taking my case. He and I are friends. We're headed to the Supreme Court, and what do you think happens? I'm at my clinic. I had a clinic in Boston, two clinics in Long Island, all nonprofit, mostly free abortions. I'm there, and I hear a scream from my head nurse in the front desk. I put down the chemicals where I was doing the pregnancy test. I look up, and a guy comes running down the hallway, kicks open the door, about 6 foot, 35 years old. He says, I got you, Baird. And I thought he had a knife in his hand. So I blocked his hand, and I used to box, as I mentioned, right cross, right in the point of the jaw, out like a light, unconscious on the floor, dragged him by the back of the neck down the stairs, pushed him down the stairs, said, take you right to light, but don't ever come back here again. And I ran upstairs to see how the nurse was. She says, Bill, why is she? Don't you know what happened? And yeah, I said, I knocked out a right to light, I'll never come back. No, you didn't. You knocked out a United States federal marshal who was serving you with papers. I said, he never identified himself. You're being sued by Planned Parenthood, my allies, who said your lawyer, Roy Lucas, was not competent and your clinic was not competent in Boston. And they said, we want to argue your case before the Supreme Court. And the corruption that I saw happened, they gave Planned Parenthood half of my time before the Supreme Court, and of course I won the case, but when you win the case, I don't know if you know this, before the Supreme Court, you are allowed to get your money back, tens of thousands of dollars. Wow. They gave Planned Parenthood for Baird, the case is called Baird versus Pilati, they gave Planned Parenthood $150,000 for a couple of months' work. I had that case for over 5 years. Not $100, not $50, not $1, which is why I'm having a hard time today economically, because they would not back me. So when you talk about allies, the mistake that we have made is that none of these so-called allies would allow me to speak because they said, we don't trust men. Betty Friedan called me a CIA agent. Here's one of the headlines. It says, they don't like men. This is in the 60s and 70s. They wouldn't let me anywhere near them. I'm saying, why in the world don't you understand that we need men and women working together as a team? And they did not accept that, and they still don't accept me. Some of these, like the New York chapters of it now, support me, yes. They say a lot of kind things, but the national level, nothing to do with me. And I don't know how to fight that, because if we're going to ever win, we've got to unite as one. Gays got to be with straights with gays, blacks with whites with blacks, and women with men and men with women. We've got to unite, and we don't do that.
No, we don't. And I further, I know your wife Joni is there with you.
My best friend. If I didn't have Joni, I wouldn't be here. I'm telling you, she's given me such courage, and she's got courage. She's the only one in the United States, and what I'm telling you is going to kind of shock you. We go, both of us together, as husband and wife, we go to the Right to Life Convention every single year for decades, and we are the only ones who go inside. There's 2,000 of them, just my wife and I carry, and she helps me carry it sometimes, a 10-foot wooden cross that says free women from the cross of religious oppression.
I have a picture of it right here. Hold on 1 second. Yeah. I'm going to put this up for you. Hold on, let me...
Fantastic, okay.
There it is.
You got it.
So this is...
You give me chills. Thank you.
Free women from the cross of oppression. Keep abortion legal. Support right. Joni and Bill Baird. So you too founded this group called the Pro-Choice League.
Right.
And so tell me, and I've got a few other pictures here too. Maybe you can tell us. This is another protest maybe earlier on when... it was about baptism
I'll show you how you get invalidated by society. I went to a town called Marlborough, Massachusetts, which is about half an hour outside of Boston. Gave a speech that I've done thousands of times all across the country. And when I got to town, I'd just spoken, as I always do, and a woman in the audience told a reporter, the name of Carol Morielli, a well-known name, but she gave a statement saying, I admire Bill Baird's courage for what he's done. That weekend, I get a phone call from a woman crying hysterically in my home in New York. And I said, I couldn't hear what she was saying. I said, what are you crying about? If you're pregnant, I'll help you. Don't cry. Don't cry. And she says to me, they won't baptize my baby. I said, why? Because I said I admired your courage, and they regard you as the devil.
Oh.
I said, that's nonsense. I tell them I'm coming up there. And I took the next plane up there. And I'm about to tell you something that's hopefully going to be the cover on my book that we're trying still to get published. On the front of the church, Marlborough Church, big black flag, huge sign saying, this flag flies in protest of Bill Baird, peddler of death. The priest inside called me a devil. So, of course, I got many death threats, but she got so many threats, and they would not baptize the baby. A friend of mine, who I knew from New York, Father Joseph O'Rourke, a beautiful, saintly, brave young man, I love him. He came together, we baptized the baby on the steps in Marlborough Church, and he got special orders from the Pope himself. They kicked him out of the church, and he died. He died shortly after that. He was a young guy, but he died, I think, of a broken heart. And I grieve inside when I mention it because I loved him. He was kind. He didn't have to do this for me. He didn't have to take the abuse. He loved his church as much as I oppose the church's political structure. He loved it. He didn't agree with the church on the reproductive rights issue, but he was a good, kind man, and he baptized the baby. And many times the church held public masses for my soul. One of the things I wanted to tell you, I lost my first wife. I lost four of my kids, little kids. I'd given her a speech in a town called Huntington, Long Island, which is where I lived at that time. And at the end of the speech, I heard a scream. I'd given speeches like this hundreds and hundreds of times. I heard a scream, and this young mother was on the floor being handcuffed. And I said, "What are you doing?" to the cops. There were five cops in plain clothes. He said, "We got you." They arrested the mother, handcuffed the mother, handcuffed me, and they took her baby into the station house, claiming the baby was a minor who would get sexual ideas by seeing a diaphragm, the pill, and the IUD. I had to go on trial. Of course, I won the case. I faced 3 years in jail, even though the mother and I were jailed overnight. We won the case. And then what in the world happens? My children, who I love and treasure to this day, God damn it, my children left with my first wife and said, "I'm not going to do this anymore.
Oh, my.
I can't take this risk anymore. I don't want to lose my children." I understood that. And they moved away, over 300 miles away, and they've basically been hiding all these years. And they feel the anger and the pain from me because they believe that my taking these risks put their lives and my grandchildren, lives now, in danger. And so they have very little to do with me in all these years. And I grieve for that, because that's a pain I need not have had. I've taken a lot of pain going in jail. You have no idea what it was to be stripped naked by guards. But you have to deal with the threat of rape every night, rats in my cell. I went through all of that, all with the simple belief that my sister, and you are my sister, as corny as it may sound to you, has every right to be free. I grew up in the slums of Brooklyn in the Great Depression in the 1930s, in the slums. I heard a scream at 12, close to 12 at midnight. My sister was only 12. I was 9. I knew she was in great pain. I went to my mom. I said, "Mom, we can't stand it. She's screaming." Finally, we didn't have money for a doctor. Her appendix broke, and she died. My mother had already lost a one-year-old child a few years ago who died also. So they got married, the immigrants, not well-educated, and they went through hell. But my father was an alcoholic, a lot of physical violence toward me as well. But the reason why I tell you that, I said, if I grow up, I survive all this, I can grow up to be a big person, I will someday try to do something with my life that will help people realize that we all are part, as corny as it sounds, we're part of a human family. Whether we're black or white or gay or straight, we're all part of the same family. Can't we love each other? Can't we care about each other? Is that hard to do and practice that belief? So that's why I am who I am.
Wow. Bill Baird, you mentioned a book. Now, you and Joni were writing your story. You've written it. But
Joni is a great writer. I can't get the book so far. We haven't been able to get it published. I think part of the reason my foes, the Catholic Church, is very much opposed. They don't want you to know that the people I had helped, four of them were nuns. Certainly, Planned Parenthood. If you notice, when you see them on television, you always hear them say, "Griswold legalized birth control." They didn't. They only legalized it for married people. Why doesn't a single reporter, or hardly a single reporter, turn around and say, "That's wrong"?
Right.
That's wrong. We got to be able to help unmarried people, is what I said, and regardless of your age. But we don't do that. And so then when I try to say to other people, look, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, we're all part of the same human family. Can't we care about each other?
No, there's unfortunately this society, this country, well, the world, but especially here right now, the hatred has just taken over everything. The dishonesty and the unfairness, and Bill, I'm hearing your story, and from the moment Barry Lynn told me who you were, I knew I wanted to talk to you.
He's a good, dear friend. He's a good man. He cares.
He's a really good man. Everybody should know who you are. Everybody should know your story. You're the reason we've had these rights for the last 50 years. And the fact that you're not celebrated for that is criminal. And now, when the whole world is collapsing on us, it seems, that you're not being recognized for you made this happen.
All I ask is accept me as your partner. I'm a good fighter. I'm creative. I don't remember. I sued the Pope when he came to the United States. So that was made Planned Parenthood very angry. They called me publicly a bigot. I said, don't you understand? For us in Boston, Massachusetts at that time, to go and pay a lot of money to build an altar for the Pope to come there is wrong. The church is a multi-million-dollar business. Why don't they turn around and pay for their own altar? Not the tax, but give that money to poor women. And people would disagree with me. So I sued, and within 8 hours, Cardinal Medeiros in Boston said, Bill Baird, misunderstanding, we will pay the thousands of dollars to build the altar for His Holiness. And they did. But they wouldn't have done it if I didn't sue them. But that was unpopular to do. When I say to you, will you boycott the business holdings of the church? You scratch your head and say, Bill, what are you talking about? Christian Brothers Wine, owned by the church. Monk's Bread, owned by the church. Trappist Gems, a big national gem company. Let them pay something. Why can't churches such as the Catholic Church, who now just came out again against abortion, why can't they be forced to pay a tax and forfeit their tax exemption? Because you're so smart, you know that we have in our nation ambassadors appointed to the Vatican. The Vatican is a government. Its own flag, its own coins, its own stamp. You can't argue with me. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So if we have a foreign government, the foreign government appoints cardinals, appoints bishops, who must do the political bidding of the church. Otherwise, they don't get to be a cardinal or a bishop. Yet all of them lobby against abortion, gay rights, women's rights. So I'm saying, if they can lobby, we have a law called the Foreign Lobbying Act. Why can't you lobby, force them to register as a lobbyist, and then they have to pay a tax? But we don't do that because, Bill Baird, you're so anti-God. I'm not anti-anyone's God. See, you'll hear this on the show, I'm sure. Fertilized egg is a person. You heard that again and again and again. The soul enters a conception. Now, think with me. If the soul enters a conception, an egg divides in half 10 days later. This is biology. An egg divides in half 10 days later. Does that mean if it divides 10 days later, each twin that's born gets half a soul, or maybe the other gets no soul? I mean, what nonsense are you trying to... See, I'm one who believes in science and logic, and I believe, if you want to say soul into the conception, I have no problem with that. But what would you say if Jehovah's Witnesses said, you can't have a blood transfusion? We're going to pass a law. It's against our religion. Jehovah's Witnesses say, you can't go and see a doctor. We're opposed to doctors. Orthodox Jews say, you can't eat ham and eggs anymore. We're opposed to pork. Nobody would allow their religion to be imposed. Yet we tolerate in this country the abuse against women by saying fertilized eggs are people, even if you're raped. Think of the brutality. I had a 12-year-old child raped by her father. Came to me as a patient. Major news story. We aborted her. People wanted my death because we helped a 12-year-old child.
Oh,
they wanted her to raise her father's child. I sit back and say, you're the religion that has raped so many little children. It's cost you tens and tens of millions of dollars worldwide, and you're going to tell me that I'm immoral, that I'm the devil? Get lost. Get lost. If I die today, I'd like to think I've lived a life of loving people, helping people. It's been a very hard life, no denying that. You know, trying to live on Social Security is very, very hard. When I used to be able to get money lecturing.
Sure.
Nobody calls me to lecture because of the fact that they have Betty is now dead, but Gloria Steinem, all these women get 15 grand. I'm the guy with 5 U.S. Supreme Court cases. Do you remember this case? They made a movie called Absolute Strangers. Nancy Klein was a young woman whose mother called me because her daughter was in New York City. Forgive me. I get so tense sometimes over this. She was at North Shore Hospital. They was 4 months pregnant. She could not get an abortion. Her husband wanted it. The family wanted it. Three right-to-lifers appointed themselves as guardian of her, and they wanted to be guardian of her fetus. So the mother called me and said, would you please help me? I said, sure. I went to the hospital, verified that she was a real person, that the story was not contrived, and everything was true. So we got the abortion for her. And I did this always with my patients. A lot of them were right-to-life kids. So when they said to me, we don't have any money, my mother would kill us if they knew we were getting an abortion from your clinic, I would say, well, look, do me a favor. You don't have to pay any money, but here's what I want you to do. If you hear your family's going to come down and going to pick my clinic or try and invade my clinic, tell me so I can be prepared. So they called me one day and they said, we want to tell you that my mother told me that we're all getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning to be at the hospital. We're going to blockade North Shore Hospital so Nancy can't get the abortion. I said, well, that's a big tip. I said, thank you. So I called the hospital. I told them what was happening. I called the police department, told them what was happening. And I said, can we move the date up until 1 o'clock in the morning? Because I knew the doctor who was going to do the abortion. And they said, sure. And they did. So the abortion was done at 1 o'clock. And then when I showed up with the right to lifers, they showed up at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning. And they were all there. And they said, Dad, where are you? You're not going to be able to get the abortion for this woman. I said, you're wrong. It's already done. And there was a picture of me in the New York Times alongside her husband showing a lot of gratitude that the abortion was done. So the reason I tell you that is when they made the picture called Absolute Strangers on CBS, what do you think CBS did? My role, which they said was vital to the success of the abortion, they replaced me in the movie with a woman saying no one would believe a man would give up so much to fight for a woman.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So all I'm trying to say to you, you know, I have fought all my life for gay rights, for women's rights, for black rights. My clinic was in Hempstead, Long Island. The guy came in to kill me with a gallon of gasoline and a torch and threw the gasoline, and 50 people were there, and burned the clinic to the ground. And the clinic was destroyed. But it's just when you look back at a life at the age of 90 and they say to people, look, all I'm trying to say to you is life is short. I grew up in the slums. There's enough to go around for the whole planet. I wish nobody would go to bed hungry without medical care, we all should share what we have, but we don't do it. I shared what I had because the court cases cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. You think the clinics that I helped, you Planned Parenthood makes a fortune selling birth control to unmarried people, couldn't have done it without me, without Barry P. Eisenstadt, and yet have nothing to do with me.
I'm not surprised, but I'm so upset and disheartened and shocked. But again, not surprised, because we tend to, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. Bill Baird, you should be celebrated. You people should be, you know, saluting you and thanking you. So let me thank you for the work you did, because, you know, I was a teenager in the 70s. Now, thankfully, I never had to get an abortion. I was lucky. I had friends who did. I remember the Planned Parenthood office across the street from my high school. I went to Hollywood Hills High School down here. I'm in Florida. And I have many friends. I went over there. That's where I first got on the pill at 15 without my parents' consent. And that's because of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. It truly does.
And I have friends who had abortions because they had to, because they made a mistake. And they didn't deserve to have their lives ruined. And again, that's thanks to you. And today, as we're in disbelief that, you know, all these Catholics on the Supreme Court. I also grew up in a Jewish family. I'm not religious at all, but my religion doesn't have any rules against abortion. They believe in the mother's health. So, in fact, there is a synagogue here in Florida who's suing against this ruling and against the idiot governor here who promised today that he is going to make our abortion laws even stricter. We're going in the wrong direction. And boy, the world could certainly you learn something from you. And I'm so disheartened to hear this.
Well, maybe somebody hearing this might say, hey, Bill Baird, we'd love you to speak. I forget what they call it, but Joni's very smart at this because I don't know very much about computers. I do something lately with what we're doing now with the
Zoom,
scope.
What's that? Right?
Zoom. Oh, yes. It's called Zoom. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's fun to be 90, I tell you. I can use that as an excuse for being illiterate about computers, that I wish I knew them and understood them better, but I don't.
You don't need to. And you know what? I'm going to make sure, I don't know who, but we have this now on tape, you know, on digital video. I'm going to send it to everybody because everybody needs to hear your story.
But nobody calls me from the New York Times, from Boston, or they used to interview me all the time. Not a single word. I sound Johnny today. Not a word from any of them.
Okay.
And
well,
they all knew my case.
I'm looking at the people in my chat room. We've got not that many, but we've got people listening. Everybody, write, you know, send a link to this to people at the New York Times, the Washington Post, to people you know in the media. Because Bill Baird, everybody should be talking to you today. First, again, to thank you and to get your wisdom. What do you say to these, I hate to call them people, these illegitimate imposters sitting on the Supreme Court who've done this?
Well, I'll tell you, if I had the money that I used to have through lecturing, I would file a suit for the removal of those three judges put in there by Trump. I think they got their positions by, false statements when they said that they had nothing against Roe v. Wade. They had nothing that would,
It was an established precedent.
Yeah, it was an
established precedent. Yep.
Right. I think that we should make them be responsible because they didn't seem to have told the truth. And that's wrong. That's wrong. When I came to my going to prison, I could have stayed in New York. I was consulting to the Senate. I would never have been put in jail up in Boston if I didn't go and voluntarily say, I promised I would work within the system. That's my word. And I did. And as scared as it was to go to Charles Street Jail, it was brutal. But I went there because that was my word.
We need to make sure people know your story. Because what you've given your whole life. So that
if you can help me
could
find a publisher, I know it's a powerful story because I've got Harlem Hospital. No, forgive me, boy. Harvard has all my collections. They said it's the largest collection in history. I felt if they have over 100 cases of newspaper clippings, that if they could sell so many newspapers writing about my stories in the 60s and 70s, why can't we make a good-selling book out of this that could help us get on our feet economically and get the story told?
Without a doubt. I mean, again, I pulled a few photographs because I did do my research, and here's one from the Boston Globe magazine.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bill Baird's 20-year war exploring the private side of tireless pro-choice advocate. You are the person about whom they say he walked the talk. We've had 50 years of not worrying about women's reproductive health or because of the work you did, and that you're not being recognized for it. And more, you know, the right likes to use the word erased or canceled. They've canceled you. That's not okay.
Well, what it is my hope is I'm just a guy from the slums of Brooklyn, one of six kids, two who died. But you can make a difference with your life, even no matter how humble you're beginning. And my thought of even doing this broadcast with you, maybe I could encourage somebody like another Joni out there or somebody like me who would get up and say, we can do more. We can try harder. We never give up, never surrender. And that's what I've lived my life by. But when you have religious forces because they have a white collar and they're holy in their eyes, and a guy like me is a heathen in their eyes, because, you know, I don't necessarily believe in any of their gods. I do believe that we have a responsibility to help each other. What is so wrong with that basic human right?
Absolutely. Bill Baird, I talk to authors all the time on the show, so I deal with publicists at publishing houses. It's my only way in, but you better know that I'm going to be reaching out to every one of those publicists, book publicists that I work with regularly, to tell them about
you. I'm so grateful. You have to be the kindest thing you could do to help me.
Well, I want to read your book, and everybody should be able to read your book.
Well, Joni's a great writer, and truly. Not only because I love her so much, but she's just a good, kind person. She can put all these things together. She's been with me forever and ever, it seems. And she's still with me. So that says a lot.
Well, I love it. How long have you two been together?
Oh, 25 years, sweetheart. 97. Married since 2005.
Well, I'm glad you found each other, and I'm so glad that you have Joni in your life, because it's hard to go through this.
My greatest ever happened to me.
That's great. Bill Baird, thank you. I'm going to stay in touch with you. I don't know how, but
you.
I'm going to do whatever I can. And I know my listeners, I'm just looking in the chat room, and they're all feeling how I am. We all thank you so much for the work you did and sacrifices you made for us. And now it's time for us to give back.
Thank you so much. It means the world to me, truly.
And me. It was an honor to meet you and have you on the show. And you have my email address. I have yours. We're going to stay in touch. I don't know what, but I'm going to reach out to everybody I can to try to get your story out there. We got to get your book published. Thank you so much.
You give me hope. Thanks.
And you give me, you make me feel better about the world. Because frankly, today, this week, I have not been feeling all that generous about the world that we're living in. It's been a rough
one. It's a beautiful place. Just give it a chance to flourish.
Bill Baird, that's my interview with him. It was done almost 2 years ago. It was the first show back after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And I learned his story, and I was mortified that I didn't know it before. And hearing that he and his wife are struggling to get by, that he's been erased by history, is a shame. And let me tell you something. I did make phone calls, a lot of phone calls, to the, as I said, publicists who I work with from the various publishing houses. And honestly, they have nothing to do with the publishing end. So the few people that I spoke to, like, didn't get anywhere with it. I reached out to Alex Lawson and Ryan Grimm, who publish books. And they told me, well, we're busy right now. And frankly, I lost touch with Bill Baird, and I feel terrible, especially after listening, because I haven't listened to that interview again since the day we did it. And my God, the man is a hero. We should all be singing his praises and celebrating him. He should have won the Medal of Honor. And shame on us that, that we don't. So I'll throw it out there. This show is now available. It'll be posted on my website at NicoleSandler.com/4-10-24. That's always how I format the shows. There's no paywall here. If you know anybody in the publishing world, they have the book done. It needs to be published. And everybody needs to know Bill Baird's story. And with that, we're done for today. The fight continues. Never thought we'd have to fight for our rights as women to do what we believe is the best choice for our own bodies and our lives going forward. But here we are. 2024? You can't make this shit up. Tomorrow is Thursday, so Howie Klein is here. We talk occasionally about the Blue America Pack, which Howie runs along with Digby from Digby's blog, and John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Well, we're going to sort of look back on the beginnings of Blue America at a time when I'm thankful that they're still around supporting, candidates who will fight for our rights to control our own bodies and more. With that, we're done. Do something good for yourself today and tell a friend or a stranger about Bill Baird and the work he did for us. And he lost so much because he lost his wife and family. Sounds like he traded up, but my God. Just shows we've got a lot to fight for. And we still have a lot to lose. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace out.